Everybody, some of us have to go and watch Barcelona. So, we're suggesting that we start. Agenda, honorable members, is we'll deal with apologies, we'll deal with our two sets of minutes from last week. We will get a briefing from the leadership of Parliament for half an hour. We will deliberate and we will close. Can I have an indication if that agenda is acceptable? It is. Thank you, Tabir, and you seconded. Thank you so much. Having said that, honourable members, if we could then move to this set of minutes, the second set of minutes, you should receive a new one because there was an amendment to one paragraph, but you should have the previous set of minutes, and those minutes are the 10th of May, 13 to 1400. Got those set of minutes? In room 315, 10th of May, 13 to 1400. I put page 1 to you, honourable members. That was the afternoon meeting, page 1, any amendments? Page number 2, any amendments? Page 3, any amendments? Are we comfortable with the contents of page 4? And blase faith. Can I put the whole set of minutes and ask for somebody to move the adoption of the minutes as an accurate reflection of what happened on the 3rd, on the 10th of May? Any movers? Thank you, Honourable Isaac. Any seconders for the 1 o'clock meeting? De Beer, thank you so much, Honourable Members. Those sets of minutes are done. The second set of minutes would be the 1840 on the 20th. You should have received a new set of minutes because we changed one of the paragraph, one of the 3.2.7 has been changed. Everything else has been the same. Yeah, you've had this set of minutes for a while. On page 1, are there any amendments? On page 2, are there any amendments? On page 3? On page 4? Page 5, I did ask members or indicate to members that 327 was changed. I think members should look at it. We tried to craft it so that it reflects honourable Waters what we were trying to say. Any changes on page 5? Changes to page 6. I put page 7 to the committee. Any changes? No? If not, can I have somebody move the minutes as a whole? Adoption of the minutes as a true reflection. Any movers? Going once. Honourable Gorbaza. Seconders? Anybody seconding? Going once. Going twice. Thank you, Honourable. You were not there. Thanks. Otherwise, you wouldn't. Thank you very much. Any matters arising, honourable members? Let me just kick start with the first one, just to clarify so that we're very clear. Honourable members, can I refer you to the last set of minutes, 3-8. You'd recall that we had a discussion about it, and we felt that the employees' compensation must be reflected in each program. That was our discussion. Leadership of Parliament came back to me and indicated that in a set of minutes of the 31st of August, we had taken a different decision. 327 also, I think it was, on the 31st of May. So let's have that discussion. My view is that what we have here is what we want. Unless members think differently, but what we have here is what we want. And if that is the case, then we must just correct those minutes of the 31st of May. But can we talk to it? Are we comfortable with what we have here? As we discussed it last week, that we separate the employees' compensation. Is that what we want? Yes, no? It is. All right. Well, fine. So let it then reverse the decision taken on the 31st of May, 31st of August. So for the leadership of Parliament, we'd like to have the compensation of employees split between the different programs. Any other matters arising? All right. We have got the fourth quarter presentation. Can I ask you, Honourable Acting Secretary, that by 7:05, we'll start looking at you to wrap up your presentation, and we'll open it up for discussion.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon, Honourable Members. I just want to talk to the point that has just been decided on by the committee. What's going to be important is we will have to write to the executive authority for reversal of how we treated compensation, because we had written to them on the decision of the committee and centralized the compensation of employees. And we will say the resolution from the committee that reverses the resolution they had on the 31st of August 2017. In terms of our fourth quarter report, we have also included the financial information. I will go straight to the introduction. In as far as we're concerned, we have made good progress in achieving the objectives of the 2014-2019 strategy. We had 19 performance indicators, and it's only 5 that we haven't met. And that 5 doesn't mean we did not implement. It means we didn't meet certain targets that we set ourselves, and that will be clearer later on in the presentation. We also want to indicate that we continue to try and build a strong institution which will sustain itself in the future. And we equally want to continue to operate within a very constrained environment and therefore try all initiatives to reduce or to contain our budget. The next slide I will speak to, it is the one that shows the non-financial indicators, just a snapshot thereof, and it provides honorable members with the strategic objectives that we have measured over time. And I want to say this ranges from issues of governance, and then of course various issues on timelessness in our turnaround in producing documents needed by members, and into of course performance awareness at reception level, as well as issues that relate to the creating a conducive environment for members to work in. So on that page 5 of the slide, it is strategic objectives as outlined. I'll move on to the next non-financial indicator performance summary. As I indicated, we had 19 indicators, and then we achieved 14, and 5 not achieved. There's a narrative that members, if you saw it, it would have said something like 13 indicators. However, at that time, we submitted to yourselves on the 30th of April, where we hadn't gotten the final data, which we finally got. So our presentation is more updated. And we were actually going to reconcile backwards. The indicators that we have not met will be shown in slide 12, and it shows various survey targets that we have put for ourselves. The last one is on our final establishment of a seamless space for members to access services they need. And the next section, I will talk to the financial performance, and that is for the whole program. This outline, as was requested, we have looked at the quarter, which is the last quarter, and compared it with the year to date. And in each of those programs, we indicate the budget for the quarter, and we also indicate the percentage of expenditure to date. The first one is strategy and leadership and governance. The budget has been spent to 98%, which is for the quarter. And then against year to date, we're sitting at 95%. All the figures are as they are there. In administration, we spend 80% at the quarter, and yearly, the end of the year, financial year, 82%. Core business, 91% of the budget of the quarter, and budget to date, 96%. Support services, 79%, and year to date, 90%. Associated services, 98%, and year to date, 99%. The subtotal there is 434 million, which was for the quarter, out of which we spent 428 million. And the budget to date, subtotals, 1.8 billion, to date, 1.7 billion, with a variance of 97 million, and we'll talk to it later on. Of course, the direct charges, this is where we return the variance is left, is returned to the National Revenue Fund. We do explain at the bottom of the slide on why we spent the way we spent. And I would take it that members would have read that, so I will not read it line by line, but I can do that if necessary. The next slide shows the breakdown in terms of the main divisions. With respect to compensation of members, to date, the percentage of spent on compensation of members is 64, actually for the quarter. For the year to date, it's 82%. And this is the 101 million that we're going to be sending back to National Treasury, as we explained earlier. Then we have compensation of employees at 92%. As to date, it's 97%. Goods and services related to the APP is 84% to date, and was 93% at the 31st of March. And goods and services members entitlement specifically, sitting at 90 at the end of the financial year, end of the year 97, at end of the quarter rather, and end of the day, year to date 97. Transfers to political parties, sitting at 100% across the board. And capital expenditure was at 8, the last quarter, sitting at 30%, just a very small budget there. On the next slide, we explain the various expenditure patterns. I just want to flag one area which is the goods and services related to the APP. You will see that 31st of March 2018, we indicate what would be a variance of 47.7 million. And we do explain that a lot of that budget comes from the legislative sector, and that is the budget that comes from the EU fund, and that's got to do with programs related to the development of seminar program that was postponed. And then, of course, The rest of the notes, as members have requested, we've actually provided for yourselves there, out of which maybe questions will come. I want to move on to performance. Program one, which is strategy and leadership and governance. We do say here that this program has performed consistently through the four quarters of the year, with two out of three indicators meeting targets. And we will actually explain later on. In the next slide, we explain what the issues are. And the one is, in terms of governance schedule implemented, in terms of S committees, those have happened. Where we do have challenges, Honourable Members, is it is not the submission of the financial reports. It is actually the tabling. When we submit financial reports, according to the FMPPLA, in 5 days' time, these reports have to be tabled. And my colleagues have said to look at what the Act says. It is impossible. The last one where we couldn't meet a deadline was on the 15th of December, where there was nobody, there was no ATC, and it was completely impossible. And my colleagues have looked at that section of the Act, which makes it quite very impractical. And you'll see in the presentation, we actually separate submission from tabling, because the section talks to both. So, and it doesn't matter whether we have a coordinated process or not. The point is the 5 days of tabling is impossible. And we would like to make a recommendation or a proposal, both to this committee as well as the executive authority. And the proposal is, when we submit to the executive authority, we will submit with a cover memo that would then come from the executive authority and then get the financials submitted to this committee. Because it doesn't describe what tabling should be. And my colleagues can actually say, my colleague Pinera can talk a little bit about that at the time we ask questions. With respect to the analysis of reports presented to the Finance and Appropriation Committee, this is the PBO, the work of the PBO, they have exceeded their target by 11 reports submitted. The next slide just shows you, just in bar graph, performance against target. I will not waste time on that. Coming to Program 1 and the expenditure against Program 1. With respect to the Office of the Speaker, year to date, the expenditure was 96%. And of course, in January and March, the last quarter, there was an over expenditure at about 107%. This was as a result of a lot of invoices coming in late. We do have challenges where travel agencies actually submit their invoices quite late. And we have a carryover. Sometimes we pay some invoices into the next quarter, carrying over an over expenditure into the other quarter. The Office of the Chairperson, their quarter budget at that time was 7.9 million. The actual was 8.2, and the variance was 3.34, but that's been evened out with the year to date. So there generally is no over expenditure in those offices, and there's minimal under expenditure. The PBO with a budget of 4.1 and at the quarter, and of course their total budget of 16 million, where the actual spend is 15.5 million, sitting at 96%. The Office of Institutions Supporting Democracy, their January quarter budget project was 3.2. Budget to date, and out of the budget of 9.1 million, they spend 9 million, which is a minimal variance, and of course, expenditure is 99%. We break it down to show you compensation of employees under that program, and I think the figures are self-explanatory. In terms of compensation of employees, we're sitting at 99%. Goods and services, 39%. There is nothing untoward in that area. The next slide provides footnotes of all the variances, which I'm sure honourable members would actually raise questions about. But a lot of it has got to do with indeed the invoices, as I was explaining, and some of it has got to do with some trips and conferences that were cancelled, particularly with the PBO, which didn't spend because they had an international conference that we postponed for next year, the next financial year. I'm going to move on to program two, if you allow me, which is 17. Program two administration, we've sustained a high level of performance from quarter three to quarter four. In quarter four, all indicators were met, and that's under administration. The indicators are outlined on our table. Number of capacity building programs implemented. These are programs for members of parliament. Various trainings that are conducted jointly with the sector, bulk of which is funded from the EU. And then, of course, they do track the completion rate of programs. They've exceeded the target there. And then, of course, we have a speakers forum wherein there are certain resolutions that we have to implement for the sector, and that has been progressing well, and we've obtained those implementation, those targets as set out. Then, of course, the latter part, I do want to say, we do say here, compliance with prescripts and regulations. This is the timely submission, and this is the point that I was referring to, that all our quarterly report, financial reports, are submitted to the authorities on time. So this is not a contradiction with what I was saying earlier on. It is actually indicating that we do actually comply, and the only challenge is that of taking, which has got to do a lot with the turnaround time, which is not practical. I think the next slide just outlines those factors into bar graphs. I will not waste time on that. I'll move on to program two in terms of the expenditure. With respect to that program two, under that you have the main divisions, the Secretary's office. The budget was 19 million. To date, the expenditure is 14 million, sitting at 35%. A lot of programs and plans in that office were not instituted primarily because of the changes in that office. The office of the Chief Financial Officer had a budget of 51 million and expenditure is 47, sitting at 94%. The quota is as reflected in the column before that one. And strategy and management, internal audit, sitting at 25%. With a variance of 3.7. This is just the transactions that have to happen in payment of the auditor, as well as them buying the an automated system of audit, assessing audit and risks, a process that we've engaged in and it's delayed. And then in terms of strategic management governance, that quarter looked like there was an over expenditure. Of course, it was 190%. However, that's evened out to 99% of the budget as of the year to date. Registrar of members' interest has got a minimal budget and they're sitting at 98% at the end of the year. We're sitting at 87% at the end of the quarter. Legislative sector, as indicated, at the end of the year, sitting at 68% expenditure, but that is ring-fenced budget. That is ring-fenced funds from the EU. Projects, these are strategic projects that we implement to execute strategy. It involves wiring and putting up video conferences, or shall I say, screens in the various committee rooms. And when it's sitting, when the quarter ended at the budget sitting at 45, it was obviously around big invoices of anything from 5 million upwards, and it's got to do with all the projects that we're doing in the various rooms and the committee rooms and improving our whole committee rooms with respect to recordings and so on. Then, of course, those projects, normally they have the beginning and then we pay at various milestones. The variance there, it's 6 million. Then, of course, the next level is the compensation of employees in that area, which is at 93%, goods and services at 63%, and capital expenditure at 100%. I'm going to move on to, I'll skip the narrative, but it does actually give a full explanation of how budget has been spent and where the resources are. I'll go to core business, which is slide 23. Once again, this is just a presentation using bar graphs. I want to move to the next. It's the same information showing you, honorable members, in different ways. Program 3, I think we did come to the committee and said to yourselves that we're collapsing all the service chapters into one, and ensuring that what we're measuring here is actually time-wise turnaround, time-wise service delivery. And that talks to the time of providing legal services, access to information, interpretation, translation, and it is in the next slide. We have exceeded and met the target and exceeded it by 2.7. Then the next indicator talks to an outcome of a survey that is conducted, and I think we've shared those surveys with members. The initial target we looked at was to ensure that 10% of the population participate in parliamentary processes. And that was our target, and we met the target. And then, of course, in terms of people saying they participate in population participating in parliamentary processes, that the first one is access, I'm sorry. First one is access, that's a question on its own. The second one is participation. We had put the target at 10% of the population of South Africa participating in parliamentary processes. Of course, there's a suspicion we didn't meet the target by minus 4%. And then we have actually explained the most likely, the most approaches that we can actually do to ensure that our public education is increased, our curriculum is increased in terms of access, and ensuring that people do understand and know how to participate in Parliament. And these are based on scientific researches that we've commissioned to the Ipsos Machina. That graph on Program 3, core business, indicates how over time we've actually been able to improve services to members, and the fact that we are measuring that. We will continue to sustain that trajectory on going forward and actually refining the services that we offer to members. And part of what will inform the trajectory or improve on trajectory is the point I was talking about, that we're trying to establish a seamless service on the ground floor of this building. So it's a physical space that we try to create for members. So when members come in there, they actually receive everything that they need in one space, so almost like a one-stop shop. And that we will achieve very soon, I think, by the end of this year. The next slide explains exactly what I was saying, honorable members. I just want to zoom into some red flag there with where we didn't meet targets. Policy advice, the reason we had 10% then, we had zero. The section there didn't have a tracking tool on when this entails the members need some summary of certain policies given to them when traveling. So the division didn't have a proper tracking tool. And then we actually ensured that they established a proper tracking tool of when is the request made, and if it's 8 days turnaround time, that has to be produced, a document has to be produced and be given to members when they need. And you will see the improvement going forward. Once we intervened, put some mediation, put processes, officials in that division were able to achieve, and they were also able to track their delivery to members. And members will see that area focuses largely on exactly what is supposed to be supporting members to ensure that members fulfill their mandate. And those are the sub-indicators that we actually putting together into a service charter. Part of what we're doing, honourable members, is we're taking this and we commission an independent survey to check the satisfaction level of members. And I must say through your chair that we would like to encourage members to respond to the questionnaires. We struggle to get respondents, quite often, although we try to reach the mark of 20% response rate, but we struggle a lot. And because that feedback will assist us to improve the way in which we work. In terms of the budget thereof, I just want to look and maybe try and address a question that was raised last week by Honourable Modara about if we don't break down the budget, what indication do we show that at least the budget drives the core business of Parliament? And Honourable Members, if you look at just that slide, and look at the program, look at the division core business support. The annual budget that area gets, where there's a lot of support that comes from there to members, is at, as you can see, that it's almost skewed towards that area, at 234 million, and what they have spent is 262 million, which is at 96%. And that's quite important for us, and it's possibly an area that honourable members would like to see that as is, because it does drive the core business of Parliament, and it does mean that we do try and prioritise our budget so that it focuses on the core business of Parliament. Not that chefs and other people are not important. Cleaners are important because rooms for committee meetings are important too. Similarly, if we look at the compensation, just looking at the year-to-date, with respect to compensation in that area, this is the highest compensation allocation to that area, which is 423 million, and the actual is 412 million, which is 97%. Obviously, there are a whole range of vacancies and resignations in that area. But the breakdown of the budget is as is. I'm going to move on. The next page talks to the footnotes and the descriptions or the explanations of how budget has been spent. I will not waste time on that one, honourable members, if you allow me. I'm going to go to Programme 4. Programme 4, we met 3 targets, and then 2 of those were not met. And then we do give explanations there, and these are the ones we were talking about, the 2 surveys that we're conducting. I want to go to the next slide that shows exactly what we haven't met and what we met. With regards to the client satisfaction level, we missed the target by -3.5. Our annual target was actually quite high thinking about the fact that we only implemented this survey for the second time in the history of Parliament. However, we think we're going in the right direction. If it's less than 5%, it's not significant statistically. And then, of course, with respect to the population who are aware of the business Parliament that succeeded, the target, and we're sitting at 24%, that's actually, sorry, with a variance of 12.2%. And these are 12.25%. These are the surveys that are being conducted and guided by the various divisions. Of course, there we also assess universal access. This is about the uptime of website and access to our whole information and communication and technologies, our ability to ensure that members have got access to our website, to usage of emails, and of course, social media, and all of that which talks to ICTs. And that we track it over time, we track performance around that area, as well as the extent of securing our networks. The annual target there is 70%, and of course the fourth quarter actual target is 32%, exceeded by 2%. Client satisfaction, which was an annual target, just marginally low by just -0.3%, completely insignificant. Then, of course, the talent management index, which has got various indices or variables the target has been exceeded. In relation to the budget, on the next page, I would just want to highlight one area where there is an under expenditure of 88%. This one on ICT on 88% is precisely because of the ICTs, that laptops and computers that we've just procured quite late, and the invoices have gone through. But together with the fact that the strength of the rand reduced, impacted or reduced positively on our side, so the cost of purchasing was much lower because of the strength of the rand. And then, of course, PCS with an 85%, that doesn't mean they haven't done their work. We had strong negotiations around flighting, advertising, and ensuring that where we place our media, we actually negotiate the cost of airtime. And then, of course, the institute support services, sitting at 92. The rest of the programs there actually are sitting at various points, and not so bad. Compensation of employees, the percentage is for year to date at 97%, goods and services 87%, capital expenditure 10% year to date. There's notes that I'm going to again just not go through, and then go to almost the last slide, program 5. That is straightforward. Program 5 has 4 indicators. 3 have been met, 1 target was not met. And this is the one I was talking about, integrated, seamless service, integrated services for members. On that slide, honorable members, you will see that we met all the targets. These range around ensuring that the handbook for members' entitlements is published at the right time, that members are paid at the right time, that we are compliant to the policies on transfer to political parties. That red is just that we can't use beige and we can't use yellow, but it is work in progress. And I can say that we do have a space that we'll actually refine towards the end of the year for members to access services in a very seamless manner. Association services, very straightforward. Members facilities, year to date is 98, at the end of the quarter it was 94. Transfer to political parties is 100%, and compensation of members below that, economic classification. I do want to flag this element of compensation of members. This is the amount of money that we sit with, which is 55.5 million. It is the medical aid of all former members of parliament, and they are now at 961, and they burden our budget. We've been working with Treasury to try and get that money out of that budget, out of our budget, because it's completely distorts parliament's budget. We will continue to pursue that budget sits outside our budget. I'm going to move on, Chairperson. I saw you were looking at me. It's the last slide. Direct charges are straightforward, honourable members, with the salaries of members. And they're sitting at 82, and this is the area where we have the 101 million to send back to Treasury. On the overall, we're in the middle of audit. General and ethnic, we've done well. And we do have challenges. We are aware of them. Part of what is also a challenge is whilst we try and fill critical positions, we do get a lot of resignations. Then, of course, we do get a lot of people who do not want to necessarily come to Cape Town to work. But one of the things that we also are doing is to re-engineer our institution in terms of administration and try and establish a macro organization that would actually have shared services and actually emphasize the need for skills that would support members. And I wish to end my presentation, our presentation at that point. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting Secretary. Let's engage honorable members. Can we use the same methodology that we always use? 3 questions, follow up, and we give it to somebody else, and we'll be around 2 if we need to. Is that okay with any with everybody? We can go that route. Anybody want to start? Cyclic start? Anybody want to start? Honourable, let's start. Ladies first, men chair. Then we will take Stianazen, and then Waters, and then Coleman. Honourable Mentor.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, today, listening to the Minister of Public Service just before now, and she emphasized on the point of Parliament, one province, one administration, that means Parliament moving to Pretoria. And then I see how Parliament spends on capital expenditure and how they sort of struggle to spend in that particular area. And when I look at it in terms of the fleet and the computers and how the explanation is given to us, it then tells us that it's not spent in line with the idea of moving Parliament to Pretoria. It's spent generally like it was before. And I would like the Office of the Deputy Secretary to explain the capital expenditure underspending. How does it happen, and what are they doing in terms of their investigations, their preliminary investigations on taking Parliament there to Pretoria? And number two, compensation on employees. You have underspent once more, and yet you're still insourcing, meaning which there is money to employ people. And what's your consideration of insourcing now the cleaning? Because cleaning services is not something that tomorrow we're not going to need. We need it forever. There's something that doesn't sit well with me. I hear your explanation in terms of the turnaround time on program one and program three, which are a result of you having reached 67 and 66 respectively in terms of your target. However, you spend 95% and 96% of budget, having not met the target. Can you explain then how do you spend 95% of budget but meet 66%? Do you do it late? You don't do it at all. If you don't do it at all, it means there is unfunded budget that is somewhere in those two areas, program one and program three. And also in program three, you are saying you did not, you reached 67% simply because in some areas, even members are not quick to respond on surveys and everything that you give to members. But there is PMG that's here. Why not utilize the services of PMG? Because PMG sits in each and every committee where members are, and they are exposed to each and every member. Why not then utilize their services? Why the need to get an extra person or company from outside to come and assist you with the survey of how the satisfaction of members to what you provide as Parliament? And then on the budget,
if you ask so many questions, they're going to get lost. There's so many. You'd rather have a second round later. But I'm just scared if you ask everything, they're going to answer half of them and they're not going to answer the other half. So it's up to you, but I'm just scared that you lose half of your questions if you ask so many. Maybe we should ask and they answer, they should ask and answer. So maybe you can have one more bite on another one if you want to.
Okay, now on the internal audit, I see there is an overspending based on late invoices. I would like to know, what is the internal audit procuring? What services were there? From where? why the need to procure services from our internal audit, because my understanding is that we have all the capacity we require as an internal audit.
The only matter of parliament meeting, and that also impacts on the expenditure. I think at the same region address, the former president said parliament will have to establish its own, shall I say, data to see what and how the relocation of parliament will impact on them. Because that decision, when we first were informed about it, only the executive had done a desktop research. So the first thing we're doing was the socio-economic impact study, which we are only going to do now in May. That project delayed. Last year it could have started. It delayed in the whole process of procuring a proper service provider to do that. And so we are going on, because I think it's important that Parliament also has its own scientifically assessed impact on the relocation of Parliament, because there was never such data when this was said. So the executive authority asked us to do that. So that project, that budget was rolled over, and that's going to be utilized now. That is why it's reflected now as under expenditure. What we also know is that it doesn't matter where Parliament goes, the features of Parliament, the needs of the members will not change. And it's useful if Parliament has got such information and data. And in that socio-economic study, what we're looking at is just the economic impact that could have in the province where we're at, and also looking at the infrastructure of what the members would need. So it's quite expensive. And we've had to get people who are really specialists in actuarial science, or actually who know how to quantify this. So we definitely are doing that. It is going to be the product that will be given to the executive authority, and of course it will be shared with all of the members. And then that reflects also as an expenditure, because by the 31st of March, we hadn't raised a PO, a purchase order. Similarly, with replacing our fleet, because I think we move from the premise that Parliament should continue doing that business. And part of what we're trying to win ourselves from is to depend entirely on the cars, the rental cars that we're using, the contracts that we're using of Drive Direct, to try and get Parliament to get a few of their own fleet and to assist with staff that sit sometimes in committees like it is now to get them home. So in that area, we're doing a lot, and we definitely, at the time it happened, in terms of the socio-economic impact study, starts at May, it will take about 2 to 3 months, and that those results will come. With respect to employees, yes, indeed, then we realize that there will always be an under-expenditure in compensation. I think the staff of Parliament, and it's not even a big turnover, it's younger, it's mobile, those who have qualifications come around here and they move on. So we continuously replace and fill vacancies and continuously lose. So that's going to be a perpetual underspend for us. However, what we've done is we've done an analysis of critical skills and critical posts. And we're now sitting at vacancies that we have to fill, and there's a whole program. I think the committee did ask us, and we did submit information on the positions that are advertised, the ones that are in process, as in like interviews, and placements. At the most, what we have now, we've got like 122 positions that we're beginning to fill. And the advantage is for 18-19, we have now received 92 million into compensation, but that, like I said, it's not real money. And that budget was taken from the directory, from that, goods and services, in terms of the money that we normally send back to Treasury. They reduced it by 92%, 92 million, and put it against compensation. That is why we can then employ. But the issue of vacancies, honourable members, it will always be with us. With respect to 95% budget met, 65%, I can say that if you look at the compensation of parliament, because we work through people and we achieve through people, our budget on compensation is always higher. Rationally told that in the private sector it has to be 55 or 40-60%. No. With us it's about 45, about more. You know, we have less, we have more people to pay. So you'll find that a lot of our investment is in compensation. And therefore when we report on the APPs, it is the deliverables against our OPEX. So there will always be that distinction. Program four. I just want to say the research that we were doing, it's quite, I can say it's specialized. And what we do, we issue a tender, it's an open tender, 21 days, and all research companies apply, and they bid, and we get the best research company that has got the right methodology. It actually has a national something. They use the numerator areas to give us a body of good scientific research. Indeed, what we will do is if we want to enhance it, we can work with PGM going forward. However, we'd like Parliament to actually have independent scientific research that can be tested and that can even actually be presented in various platforms that Parliament engage with. The issue of internal audit, I think I did explain that the other expenditure there would be money that would have gone to the AG for payment, and also they need to buy a tool that would assist with assessing the risk maturity of Parliament. Thanks, Chair.
I don't think you responded to the insourcing. Why are you insourcing? I think that was one of the questions.
We have done, and Ms. Zungu is here, she can even say more. We have done an assessment of catering and cleaning. We started with catering. We made sure that we follow the policies of our HR to ensure that we advertise in the short term to employ people who have the competences and skills, and catering will fill those positions. And we're staggering that, because when we looked and we asked why was there outsourcing, particularly in cleaning, colleagues who've been here for many years explained to us that if you do it, you must do it carefully, because there's a time where Parliament was dirty. Once you employed people and sat here, and that's why there was an outsourcing. The issue of insourcing of cleaning, it will also follow the same process. We'll do it systematically. We will advertise. We will screen. We will ensure that people are vetted. And we will ensure that we also have to buy equipment for it. So there's a whole proposal on how we're doing it. And what we don't want to do is make insource, pull in everybody, end up with a staff of about 3,000 people, then have no capabilities of managing and ensuring that we maintain certain standards of cleanliness in the institution. And that proposal, we've been taking it to the executive authority. With respect to catering, they approved it. We have to now do another phase of insourcing. But we're not going to rush it and check it in, honourable member. It's a process we're doing, but we want it to be very carefully and not just absorb. Because our colleagues have done a benchmark. They went to various institutions who had gone through the exercise of insourcing, and they actually indicated to us that it is going to be very dangerous to just absorb, and we should use our own policies to ensure that we do insource to an extent, particularly that cleaning of offices of members does become a security risk.
You know, I experimented, honourable members and secretary. It took us about 15 minutes just for this one. If we carry on at this rate, we'll be here until midnight. I'm asking for pointed questions and pointed responses. Otherwise, we're going to be here forever. Honourable Mentor, is there any follow-up before I go to Skin Agent? Just on these responses, is there any follow-up, Honourable Mentor?
Now, one area of follow-up is on the insourcing, as she says, you cannot absorb everyone because there's dangers aligned to that. But then my problem right now then listening to that, at the current moment you pay a service provider, and that service provider brings so much number of cleaners to come and work here on a certain amount per person. So what is it that is so difficult to work around the very same number? Because if you pay 5,000 rand per person, why don't you work around the very same number in order to inform you of how many people that you actually need than to take so much time?
My Mzungu, who's been working on the project, can answer that. Mzungu?
Good evening, honorable members. I think the challenge with that is that you already have the cleaners of parliament that are already earning money at A1. So immediately when you bring them in, the outsourced cleaners, you have to ensure that actually you pay them at their cost. And the money that actually we are now paying the service provider is including material and equipment and resource, which is the people that are cleaning. So when you calculate it, actually, it's even more than that 5,000 because we have additional. We have consumables as well as part of the contract.
Can you give us a yes or no answer? Are you moving from outsourcing to insourcing? And what's the timelines? Just yes or no and the timelines. Is that the idea or is that not the idea?
Chairperson, I can say it is the idea. We have a process that we follow. We don't have the timelines now because in terms of the cleaning, we have to actually take it back to the executive authority to get an approval because it's got budgetary implications. Thank you.
Honourable Senator.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My questions are three and they relate to, on the first page of Programme 2 Administration, it deals with the Speaker's Forum and SALSA resolution. I would like to request that we are forwarded a line item of what exactly is spent on the Speaker's Forum and what we're paying for out of that particular budget. And in particular, I want to draw attention to the reason for variance, and it talks about this draft sectoral bill. And again, I must put on record my unhappiness that this bill is being workshopped in provinces, but has yet to be effectively workshopped in this parliament. And it obviously has an impact on our work as well. And I find it odd that provincial legislatures are getting interactions on it, but this parliament is not getting any interaction on it. My second question is on Programme 2 Administration on slide 21. The delays in the procurement of the audit software, if we could understand what those delays are, and what measures are being put in place to mitigate against those delays and ensure that that audit software is procured and implemented. So obviously it's a very important function for us. My third question at this stage is on page 37, and it's the variances in Programme 5, which deals with transfer to political parties. There's a variance there. I find it odd because we certainly don't have a change in the number of political parties that are in the House. And if we could understand what that variance was, if it was non-compliance with the requirements of the legislation, can we understand what that non-compliance was and what measures have been put in place to mitigate against that? Thank you.
Thanks for the questions. The first one on the sector, indeed, Honourable Stenis, and the bill is in the provinces and the plan is indeed to bring it back into Parliament for final discussion and deliberation. And Advocate Pidela is driving that focus area. The expenditure of the Speaker's Forum largely comes from the EU fund, and maybe what is useful, what we should share with the committee, is just to provide the committee with the status of the work of the Speaker's Forum. Because indeed it's a good forum that brings in the 10 legislatures together and shares knowledge as well as strengthens the sector. So we will share with the committee the programs that are being conducted, primarily because some of those programs, Chairperson, will have to be absorbed over time when the EU funds get exhausted in the next 5 years. So the all legislatures must be aware of the program. So they're quite useful programs of sharing and having common practices. But if I just think that if you want to pass through your chair. Oh, okay. The audit software has been procured. We definitely need that. We're quite aware of it, and the audit committee had encouraged us. And my internal chief executive said we now have it. It will be installed, and it will assist us with all the risk measures that we have to assess, and also assess the risk appetite of Parliament. Political transfers, I'm going to ask the CFO to answer. He did answer last week. We will have to answer them now. Over to you, CFO.
Thanks, Acting Secretary. Honourable members, yes, the underspending on the political parties refers to three political parties that were not paid. We withheld money there with regards to interest that is charged on overdrafts, as it's not in line with the policy that regulates the transfers to the political parties. And the other one as well is the finance, is the fines and penalties. Is in terms of the policy, it cannot be deducted. And that is what has been withheld. We wrote to the political parties for informing them that those funds will be withheld and will not be paid over to them. That's what we. That's how it's handled on that question.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon or good evening, honourable members. I think the acting secretary has dealt with the matter relating to the legislative sector bill. We hope that it will go through the normal parliamentary processes in the near future.
Senator, follow-up, sir? Benny?
Yeah, I have got three follow-ups. Sorry to do that to you. It's highly unlikely that this bill will see the light of day in Parliament this term of office. I don't think we're aware of the restraints and constraints and highlighted at the various programme and committee meetings. But I do find it odd that none of us have been briefed on this bill, what its aims are and the like. And, you know, we get questioned by colleagues in the provinces about, you know, what our view is on this bill. And we haven't been given any of the briefing documents. We haven't been told what it's meant to achieve, etc. So I'm not, with respect, interested in the programmes. What I'm looking for, particularly in light of the question that you asked, was is the detailed expenditure, what it's being spent on, catering, accommodation, flights, etc. Because as you say, and I do know that from other sources that the EU themselves are particularly concerned about how this money is being used, if we could just have a breakdown of what of goods and services, accommodation, catering, venue hire, etc. Because if we do have to absorb it, we're obviously going to have to rationalise it before we absorb it, because we can't just simply take on the audit software. If we could just understand what software package has been procured, and then was it a competitive tender process, and then or was it a direct contract with the supplier because of unique services, etc. And then just on the terms of the political parties, my concern is that those monies would have been withheld because there have been serial non-compliance with monies already paid over. Those are public funds, and I think we need to have some transparency and accountability in terms of what measures are being put in which of the parties, what measures are being put in place to address those anomalies, to ensure that there's full accounting for those public funds that have been transferred to those political parties. So if we could get that information, thanks.
They can provide the information as
well. No, you can tell us who are the political parties.
On that one.
Who are they? Which political parties are there? You can give us all the other information. This is about oversight. Who is a delinquent in terms of not doing what they want to do? Which political parties are there? You said there were three, so you must know the names. Yeah? Okay, the first party is the African Christian Democratic Party, and then the African Independent Congress, and then it's actually four parties, I made a mistake. And then the African National Congress, and the last party is the United Democratic Movement.
All right. If you can give us that information so that we can also follow it up from our side with these political parties. And then the line items that you're talking about, when can we get that by? 7 days?
7 days.
Yes, we will. In 7 days.
All right. And the detail about the audit?
We'll get it in 7 days.
7 days. All right. We send it through us. We'll give it to the members. Is that okay? That's fine. Honourable Waters?
Thank you. Just the audit software, we're going to get these.
Yeah, 7 days. Both of them, 7 days. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I've got a few questions. The first one's to do the Treasury Advice Office, which I know has no budget and not established, although it's required by law. So my question is specifically with that item, where would that fit into which program? Which particular division in that program, and where's the performance indicator that shows that we're not complying with that legislation? Because I don't see it anywhere. If we're required by law to have such an office, and we don't have one, then surely we're not compliant with the law, if you get my drift. Then the second question, Chair, and I may be wrong here, so if I've got the wrong end of the stick, please let me know. If you look at slide 12, but on the extreme right-hand side, it says linked to expenditure, none, and PBO budget, right? And if you compare that to slide 14, where it gives you the divisions of program one, what it means is that the Office of the Speaker has no performance indicators for 42 million rand. Similarly, the Office of the Chairperson has none for 37 million. The PBO has one. And then the Office of Institutes Supporting Democracy has no performance indicators. So out of 105 million rands, there's one performance indicator, right? I don't know if I'm reading that correct, right? Similarly, then if you just go to the same question, Chair, I'm just going to take you through it. If you go to page 18, it tells you, or slide 18, it tells you there what they're linked to expenditure-wise as far as performance indicators are concerned. And if you compare that to slide 20 for program 2, the Secretary's Office has one performance indicator. The next five or four have none at all. That's Finance Management Office, Internal Audit, Strategic Management and Governance, and Register of Members' Interests, no performance indicators. Then the Register, then the Legislative Sector Support is three, and Projects is none, right? Then if you go to Program 3, that's slide 24, there again it tells you what the performance indicators are linked to as far as finances is concerned, and if you compare that to slide 27, all have none except for core business support, which is three. So out of a budget of half a billion rand, only one division has performance indicators. I hope I'm reading this right, Acting Secretary. And then on slide 31, which is program four, it gives you the indicators there, and if you compare that to the following slide, 32, each division only has one performance indicator for a budget of 357 million. So I'm wondering, Chair, if I'm correct, that is, and I stand open to correction. We have a lot of divisions that have no performance indicators whatsoever, and many with only one. And, you know, it's a big budget parliament, it is. I know we want more money, but the fact is it's over 2 billion rand. And you know, so I'm asking, how are we ensuring value for money for the taxpayer if we have so few performance indicators? And overall, Chair, this is my second question. I mean, we have 19 performance indicators and we didn't meet 5. So that's basically a 72-73% success rate when we've spent 95% of our budget. And it seems a huge difference. I'm not saying it should be exact, obviously. It will never be exact. But there's over a 20% variance there. And so it doesn't seem like we're getting value for money for the taxpayer in that regard. So that's my second question. My last question, Chair, because I know you're trying to limit us, has got to do with slide 27. And that, that's to do with the Deputy Secretary's core business, where it says that we spent 118% of the budget, so it's over. And that's got to do, I believe, with the Women's Conference. However, in quarter three, we were informed that the overspent then was 103% was to do with the women's conference. So why is it that we're still paying for the women's conference when it was in quarter two and now we're in quarter four and you've overspent by 18%? And is this the total value of the women's conference, the cost, I should say, 1.767 million rand? Or are there any more invoices that are outstanding? Thank you.
For the questions. I think when we wrote extensive indicators with many targets, it was clear that there are certain indicators that sit at an operational plan level. Then we pull them up to then constitute an APT. Then out of that, it's a strategy. So, honourable members, what you're asking for is the input that is definitely at the bottom. So it's about this that we're reporting on. It's the high level of the APP. Below that, each division has an operational plan. On a daily basis, they spend and they execute and they measure. So the institution has to decide that you want to drive and assess 50 targets for the 100 indicators, or just 20 that are crystallized around the business of Parliament. I think, honourable members, this has got to do with maybe when we do a strategic plan, we do it with you. So that you then we share with you, say, this is what we're going to measure in the next 5 years, because we take the policy imperatives and say, how are we going to execute these? And then we define them along our indicators, our targets, and how we measure them. What we used to do, I think, I don't know, but that's before the committee was formed. We used to measure the number of reports, the number of minutes produced. So we were doing manual count, you know, manual things. Now what we now measuring is the timeliness of those minutes to be produced and help the committee to do its work. So we're not measuring the input, and there's a lot of those. So there isn't a one-on-one in terms of a range to work or one-on-one linear assessment. So that's one. And then we used to measure something like number of audit reports, clean audit reports, and we found that that's not useful. And what does it say? So we changed that altogether. And maybe in the change, we do share with ourselves. Because we thought Parliament has to be strategic and try and work towards an outcome base. And say the impact you have. That's why we've introduced surveys to say, what's the impact of Parliament? What do people think about Parliament? And of course, there might be certain things that we're missing. The space, Chairperson. But that's how we approach it. And these things, there's a lot. We can bring the ops plan. We've got numerous things that people are doing. But their inputs, their own inputs, they will not tell you what type of impact you have as Parliament. So that addresses the number of performance indicators and all of that. What else did you ask about? Oh, that also applies on our members to the executive authorities. For instance, if we measure the number of escorts sitting, so what? So we measure the decisions of ESCO in as far as how we implement the strategy. Decisions of ESCO in as far as the policies of Parliament administratively. So that's what we're trying to measure. But I'm sure we can get guidance on what else would members say, as because this is the portfolio committee of us. What else would members feel should be measured? Then we can craft it along strategic objectives, along an annual plan, along an ops plan.
You missed a lot. The Treasury Advice Office, the Women's Conference.
Can you deal with Treasury Advice? Chairperson, I'm sorry, I just have so much flu now.
Chair, so far as the Treasury Advice Office is concerned, I had Honourable Waters say, indicating that there's a law that requires that it should be established. The financial management of Parliament and provincial legislature sect does not necessarily require that the Treasury Advice Office should be established. I think that point came as a result of assigning the treasury functions to the executive authority of parliament. And it was mooted along those lines. And not necessarily that there is a specific requirement in law that requires the Treasury Advice Office to be established. Thank you.
But it's desirable. Are we saying it's desirable? Is it not desirable? But Honourable Waters, you'll follow it up. The last one is the Women's Conference, yeah.
It did not spend in quarter three, Honourable Waters, on Women's Conference. It still stays, as we reported it last time, that we had an overspend of 267,000 rand, because at the time of the International Women's Conference that was held here, we had exceeded the number of women who came from the provinces. So the fourth quarter doesn't have a spend. It just reflects on the year to date.
Just on the last one, Chair, the fact is we were given a figure of 103% at the last quarter, and after 118 you said there'd be no additional spending. So I don't know why it's increasing. That's just that. Sorry if I frustrate you, if you know, my accounting isn't very good. But anyway, but from 103 to 118 says to me there's been some form of spending. On performance indicators, I get you. I mean, you could give us 1,000, you know, indicators, I suppose, and we'll be here all night. But the fact is, for example, if you take the Office of Institutions Supporting Democracy, they have a simple function, from what I see, and that's to ensure that reports from Chapter 9 institutions are tabled in Parliament, which they failed to do. Right? So there's no indicator. I mean, that's just for example. I mean, you know, I'm sure we could all go through each division and suggest things. So for me, the obvious performance indicators are not here for some divisions. That's what I was getting at. I mean, spending a lot of money, you know, it's a huge budget, and we need to make sure that the taxpayer gets value for money. Then just on the Treasury Advice Office, it may not be necessary, but it might be advisable, you know, for good governance, because the same people that are advising the executive are the ones who are supposed to have oversight over it. So there's a conflict of interest there, as far as, you know, I see it. And so for me, you know, it would be advisable and good governance if we did have the establishment of that office. Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, now I wanted to get onto that one as well. That we had a long debate about this thing, that you can't have you guys deciding on the variance and being the referee and the player. You just can't have it. It might not be there, but if it's not there and you need to put it in, then we better put it in. Because, I mean, you can't be treated differently. So that's just a comment that I wanted to make. And then on the issues that Honourable Waters is raising around the targets, and I hear what you're saying, Secretary, but, you know, at some point we need to know if there's value for money. Like you say, there's seven meetings. We don't have to know if there's seven meetings because we want to know what the end product is. The question is, how do we then make sure that those seven meetings, one, happen, and two, they're not just happening for happening's sake. Somehow we need to, even if it's not at your level of reporting, but somewhere we need to understand that what is happening in Parliament is worth the 10 rand that we're using to pay for that meeting or for that venue or for whatever the case might be. I hear you're crystallizing it, but at some point maybe we must have a discussion, even if it's at the conceptual stages. I don't know if you want to comment on these, then we move over to Coleman. Do you want to comment on any of these, or if you take our advice and you
No, I'm fine.
All right. The Women's Parliament, you're happy, Honourable Waters? You got your answer for the Women's Parliament. It doesn't make sense. You'll follow it up later on. Yeah, because that's what it's about. I mean, that if it's not making sense to members, then you better make it make sense to us. Otherwise, how do we write our report? Does this cost so much money? All those type of things that we're talking about. Is there more money coming? Why was it so much? All those type of things. Maybe you guys should give us a breakdown, because I cannot tell you that other members that are not here have a problem with the accounting for the Women's Parliament. So maybe you guys should just give us a breakdown on exactly how much did it cost, how many women arrived. We don't know those type of things. accommodation, travel, and so on. If you guys can just give us a financial breakdown of that thing. What did you spend your 1 million on? What did you spend it on? Yeah. So if you give us that breakdown. Honorable Coleman.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think other questions will just add on to the questions that were asked and responded to, but I feel I still need more clarity on. There's one question on slide 12, I think it's page 12, on program one. I'm not too sure what it takes or what's required for the report to be referred, process-wise. Because if you, I heard the acting secretary saying something to the difficulty in really timely being able to table certain financial reports, but I still don't feel that I'm convinced that there's no timers, you know, tabling of reports. Because I think we are where we are today because of the challenges of taking. If we were doing things on time, we wouldn't be having any difficulty. And what could be done then if it's so difficult to make things better so that you are able to table documents on time, especially financial documents? And then talking to the issue around the institution supporting democracy on page 15, there's something that's not clear there in terms of the balance or underspending. You're saying you made violence due to projected overspending around this particular office, but then ended up not spending that particular month. To me, it doesn't make sense. If that could be explained further, I'll be happy. The variance on the Office of the Speaker, is it really only with relation to the travel invoices, or is there anything that is underlying that we perhaps do not know? I'm not going to say much again on that one. But then I feel there could be some fiscal dumping if I'm correct on the internal audit spending. Because when you look at the amount, you're saying here it was budgeted for in the third quarter, but then spent on the fourth quarter. But then you ask yourself, what were you waiting for all along? Until the third quarter, because this is goods and services method. What were you waiting for until at the last hour that you are able to procure such services? And my worry is, in terms of the accruals, can we just get the total figure that talks about accruals so that we know at the end of the day, how much was accrued, or is this the only 101 million that was there? No, 101 is the one that was surrendered to Treasury, to the revenue fund. But then I'm not too sure in terms of the round figure for accruals for this financial year, and what exactly were they for? I can, so that I understand in a nutshell, I can see that there are areas where you have indicated. But just in a nutshell, so that as I move out of here, I'm clear that for the financial year 2017-18, this is where the accruals that accrued from there. For 2018, this were the accruals that were accrued from 2017 services. Yeah, if I can clarify on that, thank you.
Thanks for the questions. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Honourable Members. The first one is on the submissions and tabling. Section 54 of the SMPPLA says that the financial reports must be tabled on a monthly basis, quarterly basis, and the mid-year report. But then it says we must then table, it must be tabled 5 days after submission to the executive authority. And when we submit in that 5 days, it means both the chair and the speaker have to sign. And the process of tabling should be actually two for the oversight committee. What we have not cracked is, like I was saying, an example. The 15th of December is on, in December when everybody's gone. We used to table as in terms of ATC, just announce it on the ATC, then it's tabled. So it's an area that we definitely have to address, I agree with you, and find a mechanism. So what has happened is, we've spoken with Advocate Pibela and the legal people. For us, when we looked at that section, we realized that we're not sure if it's a section that understood. It was put by people who understood that in 5 days working in Parliament, you cannot get your executive authority rather to sign and then get the process of tabling in 5 days. It's just that area. That is why we're saying timely submission. We do that. We submit our financials every 15th of each month. They get submitted from FMO. So it's that area which is quite constraining for us. And I'm sure Pinella can advocate Pinella with us to amending that section. That's one area. And then can I move on to the next one? CFO will talk on the department of the OISD. Office of the Speaker, honourable members. There's office constitute of the House Chair, I think three of them, and the staff of the House Chair. And all of those honourable members are involved in various activities, the CPA, SADC, KP, and what normally happens is bringing back all the invoices and making sure that they're paid on time, there's always a lag behind. And this is what we're dealing with. So it's not necessarily the Speaker herself, it's all the other offices that include the House Chair offices. Can you talk to the other
thanks. I will talk to the Akruas Assistant Kunawula Assistant ISD. The total amount of across SID 11 of May is 30 million. And that is for mostly travel and accommodation of what would have been expensed or travel done in January, February, and March. But we are still at the end of the financial year, also ensuring that we have contacted all the suppliers to give us even the statements, just to ensure that there's nothing that is still outstanding on their side. But as it stands at the moment, it's about 31 million.
30.
Yes. Yeah. There might be more. The suppliers that are giving us invoices. But what we have done, we have ask for mostly the traveling management companies to give us the statements, because mostly that is what accounts to our invoices that will not necessarily be processed by the 31st of March 2018. But it is an amount that when we finalize the financial statements for this financial year, then we will ensure that it's complete. What we also do is to do an unrecorded liability test, where we look into all the payments we have made from the 1st of April until the last day of submission of the financial statement, so that we ensure that the payables are complete.
Thanks, honorable members. I will talk about the explanation on the office of OISD. What happened during the third quarter report, that office was showing a possible overspending of 1 million. So what happened, we wrote to the executive authority to request that money be shifted from areas where there were possible or other spending to cover for this one. So normally with the budget, if we can check the budget for the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, the fourth quarter, it will equal the year to date. So if you can check the budget of 3.2 for OISD, not everything there was for the fourth quarter. There's also money which has been shifted there to cover the possible underspending. That's why the year-to-date there is 99%. Thanks.
You know, sir, you've just made me make up my mind. We need a treasury office. You know, you just said to me now, you saw it possible and then you took the decision. It can't work like that anymore. It can't, that you underspend and then you decide you go to the authorities and say shift the money to somewhere else. And there's nobody that gives an independent view of should we or shouldn't we do it. I think what we are saying to you, that office, it must be set up. There must be an independent advice to Speaker whether money must be moved from OSD to something else. We're just making that decision. Go and implement it. Is there any follow-ups that you want to do? We'll come back. Were you going to follow up on these ones or the new ones? All right, but let's just take Coleman because she was initiating it. Over to you, Coleman.
Thank you. Yes. I don't know. What's the actual policy of Parliament? Just to understand. Because if you say you're going to wait for the end of the financial year has ended, you're saying end of what? Audit period, which is September.
Submit the financials to the AG in terms of the act on the 31st of May.
Of 31st of May.
Yes.
Oh.
In terms of the act.
But then what I don't understand is, you know, in terms of accruals, all programs don't know what they owe or what invoices, for instance, is supposed to be paid. Are you, if you're saying right now you're not sure, it's only 30 million, but you're not sure, there might be more. Are you trying to tell me that you haven't consolidated all monies that you owe to other people? Is that what you are trying to tell us? Because that to me is quite problematic if that's the case. Because everybody should be knowing by the end of at least March, I mean April, that at least this is what we owe. It's now May. And today you're telling me that you don't know. 16th of May doesn't make sense. I'm not happy about that. And I'm still not happy because also on the 5 days thing, ma'am. Because I believe that such things you plan for. Because it's not something that comes as a surprise. It's something that is there that you know that you plan. You know that the 5th day in December is going to fall, you know, during constituency period or when we're not here. And then you have an alternative. So that if I'm not, executive members are not there, what then do you do, or members are not there, what do you do in that case? Do you bring it forth, or what is the alternative? That's the kind of planning I'm talking about. And lastly, Chair, I'm just worried because the 101 surrendered. To me, it's a lost opportunity. I'm talking now, I don't have, since 2015, a content advisor. And I'm asking myself, if this money of 101 million is surrendered, and I know of committees that do not have researchers, very important support staff that they do not have, which to me is very core. So, and you're returning such amount of money to treasury. What does it say to us? Because it cannot be that since 2015 a committee does not have, and every year we surrender money back to the revenue fund. There must be something that is not going okay. And I'm not convinced that it's due to lack of, you know, skills. I think it has to do with the challenges that we are facing in terms of recruitment in the legislature. Thank you.
I'm going to allow others, but it's follow-ups on this, not new stuff that has been initiated by Honorable Coleman. So we'll start with you.
I just want to come back to Section 54 because it's quite important. And, you know, it's a peremptory directive. It's not may, not should, not it's must. So unless that section is amended, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to get around it. It's going to have to be complied with. But again, it's not you who is responsible. The Act is clear. It's executive authority. It's executive authority's responsibility
table. And unfortunately, just sending it to us as the committee is not going to satisfy the letter of the law, because it says there very clearly that it must be tabled in Parliament. Then Parliament must, if you read the second section, Parliament must then refer it to this body as the oversight mechanism. So sending it directly to the oversight mechanism is not going to give you the loophole to get around that piece of legislation. But I do say that I struggle to believe that in the electronic age, where we have this app now that Parliament's developed, and paperlessness and electronic signatures. I mean, as a presiding officer or a member of the executive authority, Chair, and I'm sure you've got the same with your PA, you don't physically sign every document. You read it and you say, I authorise you to attach my electronic signature to it. And, you know, no matter, you could be sitting in Geneva and sign up a document here in Cape Town. So I just think we need to be, you know, more efficient, I think, with this, and proactive. I do just want to come back to, I think the Honourable Coleman makes a good point about these invoices, and it begs a follow-on question from that, because if we were following the President's directive to pay at 30 days, you shouldn't be sitting with these types of problems, because you would know as a department then, you know, what you have not met at 30 days. And I would sincerely hope that departments and programs are keeping a watchful eye on what is being paid beyond 30 days. Because, I mean, we can't have the President of the Republic issuing a exhortation to government departments and the public sector to pay at 30 days, and Parliament itself doesn't. So I'd like to know, you know, what is the age analysis on these unpaid invoices and the reasons for them? And maybe we need to get a briefing as well. As one of the metrics that we look at, Chairperson, is invoices paid in 30 days and what Parliament's compliance is with that directive.
Follow-ups on this? None? Let me just add my 2 cents worth on what everybody's saying. You know, I don't buy your argument on the accruals. I'll tell you why I don't buy your argument on the accruals. An accrual is for a service that has been provided. There must be a purchase order and all those things before the service comes. So, by the time you ask the transport provider or the computer company, you should know that we are waiting for an invoice for 18 Rand from Computerware. Or it can't be the 31st of March. You'll pay on the 31st of March, or you'll reconcile and do all those things then. That we understand. But you should be able to give us a document that says, these are the accruals. And you could argue at that point that we must wait for the reconciliation. So don't conflate the two. It's not the payment. We want to know, what have you committed? Because next year you come and you say to us, it's not an underspend because it's already committed. How do you make a statement that it's committed if you can't tell us who and when was it committed? So those accruals are something that you guys have to find a better way of accounting to us. You can do something different with Auditor General, but you must account to us, because I think Coleman and everybody else is worried that you are arguing that it's not an underspend because it's an accrual. But if that happens to be an inaccurate statement, we then actually sit with an underspend, and yet Parliament doesn't have researchers and so on. Do you hear what I'm saying? You need to prove to us that it's in fact a genuine accrual. Gabaza, and then we will ask you to follow up, and we'll get it. Was this a follow-up on these questions, Gabaza?
These accruals are so consistently spread over the quarter, and it's not clear what steps Parliament is taking to follow up consistently on those, so that you make sure you pay on time. But of worry as well is that some of these accruals are now flowing into the new financial year. And it's not, we would like to hear quite clearly whether those funds have been rolled over to the new financial year, or the accruals are now crowding and suffocating the progress of the new financial year. so that we understand what this animal is all about.
Honorable Dubier, and then you'll respond.
Chair, thank you.
The
crew, pardon?
It's a follow-up on this.
Yeah, it's linked to this one. The accruals must be stated on every quarter in detail that we get the real picture of the finances and that we don't hear it at the end of the year. Even if in the financial statements that go to the auditor general, there must be a note to the financial statements explaining that. Thank you.
All right. What is about the 101 or 110,000 that has been surrendered when there is still so much service or so many warm bodies that we require? Accruals, I think we've explored. You understand our sentiment. And then there was the issue around the 5 days. Is this or the report? You guys want to respond to that?
We concur with the signing of and indeed compliance. We're very aware that, you know, compliance. It isn't that we've been sitting around just doing nothing. We definitely try to get the financial signed at the right time. So that will pursue, and I'm sure we can correct that. But we have raised it with the legal people to say it's somewhat completely impossible. And then the treasury advice, Chairperson, if you allow me, we had actually employed somebody, but there was no budget. This is one of the cuts that were done by National Treasury. We put together an office, we costed it, we submitted 2 years ago and last year. And our budget, those PBO, Treasury Advice, OLP, are still not funded mandates of Parliament. So all we're asking is when the vote to happen, I think members should actually rise and I don't know. I mean, even the executive authority has been trying to have a meeting with the minister. Because I'm saying this was, we met 3 times or 4 times with the old DG and the new DG. We still had a meeting on the 24th of May. All the time we asked him for the budget. Look, we don't want to bring in, if you have to bring people in here, 2 persons, and incorrect, Chairperson. We know that the executive authority needs that support. Precisely. Kaya Mfono was here and he was doing that function. But we couldn't establish an office and he left. So that's something that we're battling with and struggling with, and hopefully that message will go to Treasury beyond us as technocrats. The accruals, I think, the CFO will talk to. I do want to agree with the members. We actually do have an analysis of invoices. So we have an age analysis. We even have detail of some of the big invoices where we're fighting with service providers who want us to pay them around the 30 days, and we take a risk as a service provider. We fought with for a year and a half, and owing quite big money, and until they decided that we were right. So there's also a balance that we're not found to be due to be spending irregularly and fruitless.
Thanks, Honourable Members. Let me start with the one on the 101 million that we surrender for compensation of employees. It's provided on Section 23 of the FMPPLA. That result, that is an understanding resulting from direct charges. From direct charges, which is members' remuneration. In terms of the Act, we have to return it to National Treasury. Unlike if it would have resulted from your own revenue appropriated fund. That's why what remains on goods and services and compensation, we can retain. However, what remains from the direct charges we have to return, and that is in line with the Act. And when it comes to the payments, our average as at 31st of March of payments to suppliers is sitting at 16 days. But what we can do, Honourable Members, we can provide an age analysis to assist in identifying whether we are actually paying suppliers within 30 days. And whether we've got reasons where suppliers are not necessarily paid within 30 days as the Act provides. And when it comes to the accruals, we are aware that our accruals is at 30 million, if I have to say. We are still using a manual system when it comes to travel, where a warrant is actually given and there's not necessarily an order, maybe, on how we process the travel. That is an area of improvement, honourable members, which will then assist us going forward, not to wait for the suppliers to give us their statement, which is what we do now. We are looking into procuring a system that will ensure that even travelling will actually be done on the system. Then we do away with the warrant books.
So those suppliers include SA and those type of people. You know, because if it does, then we have a problem. Because some, on the other side, they complain about cash flow. But on this side, you're sitting with 30 million rand that could... You understand what we are saying? It's all of us that must fix this up. You can't sit here. And if you're saying that to us, then let us go to SAA when they come and ask for bailouts and say, maybe you should collect your money on time instead of getting bailouts. But we can't have this, you blaming us and we blaming them. And let's say something else. At our next meeting, we're going to call Treasury to come and sit here. We're going to call Treasury to sit here because we can't have a situation where you say Treasury does this and Treasury says you do this. Both of you will sit and we will play the referee. So be aware we're going to call Treasury. Any other questions that members want to ask? We've concluded those ones. If not, can I have my round this and then you can continue? Can I have just two on my round? The first one, Honourable Seth, I think... Waters asked you about the Women's Parliament and you said that in the third term there was no activity. Is that what you said? Is that what you said? No, I think you spoke about the third quarter. And why is it the third quarter you were over and the fourth quarter you're over? I think that was a question that he asked. Okay, yes sir.
The quarterly financial statements you got for the third quarter showed a 103% spend. Right. Now it's 118% at the end of the fourth quarter. During the fourth quarter, it shows no movement. It says north, north, north. So, I mean, so that means the financials we got in the third quarter were wrong. That's the point. But I still want the breakdown, Chief, as you requested.
I just wanted to touch on that one, but let me put my questions to you. You see, in the same light, Secretary, you know, if we look at your programs, and I want to give you an example of inconsistencies. On your fourth quarter report, let's take program support services. Have you got something called program support services? You do it. You do. And in your program support services, you would have budgets for quarter one, or you'll have the budget for the year. And then in every quarter, you'll say, this was the budget for the quarter and that type of thing going forward. You with us? In 2017, your annual budget was 305 for support services, 305.9. E&E, 305.9, are you with us? 305.9, your annual budget. Then you go to quarter one. I'm just going to give you an example. In quarter one, you say the annual budget as presented by Parliament is 307 million. Quarter two, you have 307 million. I'll give you the table if you don't have it. Quarter three, your bottom line then moves from 307 to 364 million. 364,000 million. Yes, 364 million. And then quarter four is 357 million. Now, the question that I'm asking is, why are your bottom lines changing every quarter? Because if Parliament gave you or you budgeted 305 million rand for the year, I would imagine every quarter that would be your bottom line. You don't have this piece of paper. Let me show it to you so that you understand it. Can you tell us where it came from? if you look at it, you'll see it. I'm just talking about the consistency on that one. If you can explain that, the one that I've highlighted. And then the second question that I wanted to ask you, Speaker, Acting Secretary, is do you have cash on hand? There's a figure from Nedbank that gets bandied around with us all the time. What is the money that sits in Nedbank, your 30 days in Nedbank? What is that for? If you could explain that to us. Are you aware that you've got a 30-day deposit account in Nedbank? You can explain what that is for, and then that slide for us, and then we'll go back to honourable members for the last round.
Thanks, honourable members. The budget that we have, if there is any payment that is not yet made or money that remains within our account, what we previously had, let me say for 2015-16, 16-17, we would have had a 32 days call account. And then what we then did, we realized that the interest that we were actually getting on the 32-day call account was very much minimal as compared to the notice deposit account. So anything that then remains, then we did not use the call account anymore. Then we then arranged with the NetBank to give us a NetBank deposit account, as they call it, which gives us almost 7.73%. It was mainly for that reason.
The question we're asking is, what was that money intended for? What was the money intended for? Because this is not interest. This is money that was not spent timelessly. You're putting it in this account so that you can yield interest. We understand that. But what was that money intended for?
It will be money that, when we close the year, 31st March, anything that remains, which is actually what is not yet spent on any supplier, until the payment has to be made, that is where we will actually keep the money for any service. So it is not necessarily the thing needed for a particular project or anything, but it's a variety of all the services that are actually rendered.
You take your money out of your current account to put it in this account to yield interest.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. And somebody else to talk to the slides.
I'll ask perhaps maybe to go through that because we haven't really.
All right, let's take the last round for members. It is 8:30. We're going to take all the questions and you'll try and respond to them, and there's follow-ups. For which one is this? No, they're going to look at it now. They're looking at it now, yeah. All right, I want to take another round. If there is anybody that wants to take a second bite on anything, Honorable Gabaza would be one, and we will limit it to about one question. It's 8:30 already. Honorable Mente, you'll be following Gabaza. Yes. All right, Honorable Gabaza.
Chair, on slide 29, the first paragraph, first line. The spending of 995,695,689 of the 595,415 shows an overspending, but it's recorded as 100% spending in the same line. If you could explain that. That goes for the same goes for the second amount in the same line going to the following line. It links with the second sentence. It says the variance of 10,624,000. If you count the first two figures, none of them are recording 10 million, and the second figures too. So what is that? What is that 10 million variance coming from? Because it's not clear where it comes from in those two figures. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, firstly, I want to go back to the document you gave over in terms of the ENE and clarify. The bottom line that the chairperson is referring to is your quarterly report differently.
What you reported to us in the first quarter, the second quarter, the third quarter, to the fourth quarter, is not the same thing as what the EME is saying. So if you go back to your computer and retrieve all the four documents, you will actually see that your totals are not the same. That's what we want to know. And that talks to you not having that Treasury Advice Office, because if it was there, your ENA was going to be your guiding document. That's the problem. I just wanted to clarify, Chair. Chairperson, I need clarity on the issue of the Parliamentary Budget Office. And it's extremely overseeding of targets. Why is that? Because it's abnormal. It's either they have targets that are too low for their capacity, or the office is overstaffed, or they are working too much and actually work for the people that must go in terms of vacancies. So why are they exceeding with more than 200%? What's happening there in the budget office? Because also the issue of you and the inconsistencies could have been assisted if then the budget office was this exceeding of targets by the budget office. It means that they are forever guiding you in terms of what you are supposed to be doing in Parliament at large. But the two terms of budget, which is February and October, and what you report to us is always inconsistent. So can you give us the functions of the budget office? Why are they over exceeding so high? And it's actually, for me, it's too much, it's unbelievable. There's something happening. What contributes to that? Thank you.
All right. And from my side, can we go to slide 26? On slide 26, you, on core business, just as an example, you have legal advice, and you score 100% for every quarter, including for the whole year, 100%. Can you explain to us, is that target quantity-based or quality-based? Because you've not made 100% successes in your legal challenges. So to say to us your legal is 100%, are you saying, and how would you know the 100%? Because you can't thumbsuck how many people are going to charge you, or not charge you, how many people are going to take you to court to have a... What is that? What does that target mean? If it means that you've had 100 challenges and you've won 100 challenges, then I'm telling you that thing is wrong immediately. So please explain. I think the point we're making, don't give us targets that are meaningless. Mente is talking about a target where you exceeded by 250%. That's a soft target. It's just a soft, there's no way you can reach a 250% target for a budget office that on the one hand you complain is underfunded. One hand it's underfunded, you make it 250%, and we receive some explanation from the budget office, which quite frankly I don't buy. So I think the point we're making is that when you come back to us, please give us targets that are meaningful. So explain, Mentors, you're almost walking on water. On the budget office, you're walking on water. 200% success rate, show me that individual on earth. And then why is this 100% for legal, and yet we've lost quite a few legal battles, and yet you give us a target of 100%. Is this quantity or is this quality? And also then you talk to the Gabazas, have you given us 100% yet there's over or underspending? If you could talk to those matters, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay, thanks very much, Chan. With respect to the PBO reports and produces reports for the four committees on finance. And their report is that their turnover of those reports on analyzing various budgets are exactly what they have reported. So they don't deal with our budget as in like the administration budget. they are a separate entity in terms of their mandate, and they service the Joint Standing Committees on Finance. I would take the point, they are not actually, they are understaffed as far as they have reported to us, and they would need more staff, and they are very professional. What you are saying, Honourable Member, is maybe when they started, they put their target too low. So what you are saying is it must be revised, accepted, for 1890. And I think a discussion will have to be held with the professor, with the chair, the director there. Because we don't necessarily receive that direct reports that they produce. We get, they share them with us. The timers, Chairperson, incorrect. What we are not assessing is the number of cases we're losing, the litigation. We're not assessing impact. We're assessing for legal services the turnaround time that they provide legal opinion and support to members in terms of legal needs. So we're definitely not looking at the issues of how many cases we've lost and so on and so forth. That report we have, though, and it's a question of at what time do you then change to look at the impact and how do you assess that impact? Because, and I'm sure Advocate Pineda can even speak better than that. If, for instance, Parliament loses a case, does it really mean that it's got to do with what a Parliament's position legally is? Or is it contestations out there? However, what we are measuring here, they have a measurement of providing legal service 6 days turnaround time. That's all we measure.
So it's not the quality of the service, it's the quantity of the service, I'm saying, for want of a better word. 6 days, you give us 6 days, whether that thing succeeds or not is a different story. And it's going to boil down to the question of value for money. Don't give me something for 6 days for blind compliance and you lose the case. Or it's poor legal advice. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that we want to inculcate, and it must be a legacy going forward that honestly we need to have targets that are meaningful to all of us and not applying compliance. Just the last point that I picked up now, I'm sorry to do this to you. You know, and this came from the budget office. You showed us for 2017-18 that your annual budget for interest, in other words, you forecasted interest of about 30 million. Your interest? It's millions, I think. 30 million? Okay? 30,000. Must be 30 million. Yes. Your annual budget for interest was 30 million. You don't show us any actual for that year. And then your budget for the next year is 10 million. Why was it 30 million in 1 year and 10 million in 1 year? We can explain that. The same goes for your sales and other revenue. You've got 2 million that you budgeted this year. For the current year, 2017-18, you budget 2 million or 3 million. And for the 2018-19, you've got no budget for sales and other revenue. Why is that? If you could explain that. And the final one, your donor funding. You've got nothing in your 2017-18 budget for donor funding. 2018-2019 budget, you've got 39 million. Could you guys explain all those discrepancies? Why do you have it in 1 year, you don't have it in 1 year, you have interest at 30 million rand in the current year, and in the next year you see interest going down. How do you explain all those discrepancies? If you don't have answers now, you can also give it for 7 days, because we're ambushing you, but it's here. All right. You can answer it. Answer them.
Let me answer the one on the interest. Due to our budget being reduced to almost 129, what that means is whatever we might have had as reserves, we then have to use, which therefore drops our bank balance. And once our bank balance drops, then the interest that is aligned to that then would automatically drop. it's that reason. Usually previous, mainly because we used to carry a lot of retained earnings. That retained earnings was the one that mostly translated to a high interest as a result. And then Mr. Kola can assist on the one of the sales. I think it's a very good answer on that one. On the sales, yes, or department.
Thanks. I will have to check on the budget for 18-19 to see if there's no sales being put. So I'm supposed to be there at all minimum. So if there's no budget at all, I'll have to check and provide the instant response. Thanks. Donor funding is there, even on the 17-18. All the budget for NSS is from the donor funding. The NSS credit from the donors can go to program 2. Whatever budget is there for legislative sector is from the donor funding.
From any budget for it.
Yes.
Yes. We'll clarify it with our advisors in the budget office when we get that chance. Honourable members, it's 8:30. Can we safely say we're happy to wrap up? You will give us responses in the agreed time on those other matters. We next see you when you give us the audited report. That's the next, right? The draft budget.
The draft budget of 18-19 or the 19-20. When we will actually even, we need to go through the APP properly with the committee so that we.
End of May. That's what we are told, so prepare for the end of May. For that.
First due to the Executive Authority on the 31st of May, and then after that.
Okay. Processed it through the accounting authorities. Honourable members, thank you very much. And to the Secretary and her team, thank you very much. To those that assisted us in preparing, thank you very much. The meeting has adjourned. Cindy, I'm assuming we've organised transport. For those that need transport, there is transport organised. And there is dinner at the back, honourable members. Thank you very much.